The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Man, you're fading my music out early. That's okay, though. This is Kevin Cry. This is my show. That was Billy Joel, and that is his song, My Life, which I absolutely love. This is a show that I pay for myself. I have no paid sponsors. All opinions are of those of mine and then my guests independently. I'm really excited about this week. I have two amazing guests in studio. Rarely do I have guests, but to have two and both equally so amazing is going to be phenomenal. So the first half hour, we're going to talk to a new friend of mine, Felicia, who I'm going to introduce here in a second. But before we do that, I'm going to get to the weather. It's going to be freaking hot. So there's your weather. And if you want to go to Weather NorCal, my good friend Mike Kruger, he is your weather guy locally. Again, that's not a paid plug. It's just he's phenomenal at what he does, and that's where I get my weather. But when we get into June, once it gets over 100 degrees, it's basically just stay indoors and drink as much water as you can. So it's supposed to be 108 Thursday. Once I saw that, I said, I'm not even going to do a weather report. It's just going to be hot. I've been out the 3-on-3 tournament yesterday and today. There's a lot of things happening in Shasta County. There was the Youth Options Mud Run yesterday, which I didn't get a chance to make it out there. I do sit on that board, but I understand that went really well. Being at the 3-on-3 basketball tournament at the Civic Center, I'll tell you, that's the very first time since I've when I say been associated with it, I'm just a dad of kids playing, but I'm not playing this year. I play maybe every few years. But it's the first time I can remember where I saw zero fights, zero screaming, zero people getting ejected. And it gave me hope. It actually gave me a lot of hope that maybe in some small way that's a symbol that Shasta County, at least here in Shasta County, we're on this path to maybe getting along. And that brings me to my first guest. I was talking to a friend of mine, a mutual friend of Felicia and I, co-worker of hers, and I saw a post from Viva Downtown, I believe it was Viva Downtown, about a prom coming up. It was the NorCal Outreach Prom, and I clicked on the comments because I saw there was a lot of comments there, and it was really it was interesting to me to see how many people were going back and forth, how they were upset, and other people maybe were offended. And I was like, geez, I said, you know, I just wanted to get on Facebook for a few minutes, you know, see if I had any friends that had any grandkids or anything else like that. And then I get sucked down that rabbit hole of that. So called my friend, who I won't say his name, but I called my friend and said, hey, because we both have a mutual friend who's gay. And I said, hey, I'm thinking about having her on the show. And he said, hey, I know somebody else that would be great on your radio show. And it's a coworker of his. Her name is Felicia. Felicia, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
All right. And so, Felicia, you're married to your wife, Kayla.
Yes, sir.
And how long?
We've been married since 2019, but together since 2017.
Okay. So when I called Felicia and said, hey, I want to have this conversation with you, and I'm looking at her, so it's kind of funny because we're on the radio, but again, people can't see the mannerisms and stuff, but we haven't spoke more than maybe 3 or 4 minutes this morning, correct?
Correct.
And I called, our friend put us in touch, and I said, hey, I called you up, or you actually texted and said, hey, I'd be willing to come on the show. And then I called you. We said, what do we want to talk about? I said, look, I want to break down stereotypes. I want to know how I'm supposed to address yourself or people that, again, see, why should it be awkward that I'm sitting here trying to say, because I don't want to offend you. You know, at the same time, I work with thousands of kids and people that are, and again, do you go, is it gay, lesbian, which is the more politically correct term?
Well, and I'm the type of person that I don't follow under the politically correct terms anyway. I won't get offended by anything.
Can you be best friends? Yeah, because I'm not politically correct.
Yeah, I don't want terms. I just want to have a normal conversation. What does it matter who I sleep with, who I don't sleep with,
exactly,
who you sleep with, who you don't sleep with? It doesn't matter. What matters is we're both human beings, and do we agree on the same points or do we not agree on the same points? And as far as terms, I mean, you can call me whatever you want. As long as you don't have a tone to it, I'm not going to care.
Okay, that's perfect. Because one of the things I've seen since I've been in office is, I mean, I've always been, again, I grew up in Shasta County, and I know that you said you grew up in Shasta County. You were in the, you left for roughly 6 years, give or take, depending on what your assignments were. But, again, thank you for your service. And so you've been in Shasta County. So, you know, I've been in Shasta County a little longer than you because I'm, you know, 14 years, 15 years older. Let's just call it 10 years. Let's just round it down. And, you know, so growing up in Shasta County, I didn't have a lot of gay friends. I had a couple in high school that we assumed maybe were gay. And what I've learned now is there were other people I went to school with that were gay but were afraid to come out. And that's a little heartbreaking as I get older to realize that people lived under this veil that they couldn't come out maybe to their friends. But I get it. Growing up in the 80s and 90s, especially in Shasta County, was way different than it is today. But where I feel today, and the reason I wanted to have this conversation, is because everybody gets so sensitive and insulted. Everything turns to vitriol. So go ahead.
I mean, I think most of that probably just comes from psychology and the fact that we're already growing up on edge because, you know, you're scared of your family knowing, you're scared of telling them to be disowned or whatever else. So what happens to all that anger once you bottle it up? It doesn't go anywhere. It just starts lashing out against people that have nothing to do with that. But that's where it's coming from, is the fear of, you know, being rejected by society, by our families. And we're taking it out on the wrong types of people.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, and, you know, I have a son who's a sixth grader. We opted him out of, I mean, we do our own sex ed for all of our kids in terms of, you know, what we teach him, how we teach him, et cetera. And in, when my daughter, who's a sophomore in high school at Foothill, when she had it, I believe at, was it, I don't know if it was Buckeye or Boulder Creek, but the very first, it was like a two-day, it was a two-part thing, and the very first day was all about gender identity. And are you truly a girl or are you truly a boy? And it was inserting this into a bunch of her friends is like, you know, into their brain. Like, well, I don't know. I've never been asked that. Maybe I am a boy or maybe I am a girl. And we were like super troubled by that. But we pulled our daughter out. So where do you like, where does a dad like me who doesn't want the state educating their kid? How can I help my son understand that people are going to have different, you know, views in terms of sexuality than us? But this is what's weird. I'm talking through it myself and just like my son just loves everybody regardless of who they are.
And that's all that really matters in the end. Everybody wants to focus on, oh, education should teach this, education should teach that, but they're focusing on the wrong avenues. Everybody wants to talk about, oh, well, different types of genders, all of these things. But then there's charts about, you know, and excuse me for talking about this, but, you know, there's charts for period blood that they don't talk about for girls. You know, there's different colors that mean different things that you should go to your doctor and talk about. But, you know, let's just talk about what gender you might be instead.
Yeah.
You know, these are important things that kids actually need to know versus, you know, their identities that they're not even curious about yet.
Exactly.
They'll figure it out by what feelings that they're getting when it happens, yeah. You know, and when the only thing you can do as a parent is just be there and be an ear for them to talk to.
Yeah. You know, and what's really difficult for me, because my companies, the majority of them, let's say four of the six, really, really focus on kids. And I see the kids in many districts that are from very disadvantaged, low socioeconomic backgrounds, have very, very little support. And when the kids don't have two parents at home, loving, caring, or four positive role model adults, their chances for success are low. So you're having those conversations, you know, at home, with Kayla, and I'm having them at home with my wife, Sarah, but a lot of kids aren't getting that. So like how, and I think this is where some of the anger comes from some people, I guess, because I mean, you said you're conservative, that the conservative parent says, hey, I don't want this talked about to my kids. I feel like they're being conditioned. But what do we do like to get people in the school systems to say, like, to focus on what you just said about period blood and why they're not focusing on that? Like,
I you know, and I've wondered that years myself, is why can't we focus on medical things? Why do we have to focus on societal standards and what everybody's talking about in the media and politics and all of these things? What does that have to do with our children and what they're learning? They don't need to learn about the politics side of everything until they're ready to vote and do those things. And, you know, we should be prepping them for that in high school, not in elementary school.
Yeah.
In elementary school, they just want to play. You know, yeah. They don't want to wonder, you know, is Johnny supposed to be a girl or not? Like, they don't want to do that. They just want to play on the slide.
Yeah.
That's all they care about.
Yeah. Do you feel so, being in your early 30s, okay, not giving away the age. So being in your early 30s, like, how have you seen Shasta County change as it becomes more, let's say, more understanding, accepting? And I don't want to say accepting or understanding, because I don't know what the word is. Like, for me, you know, I haven't dealt with it, but I want to be sensitive to it because I never want to offend anybody. And that's what's bothered me the most about being in politics. People just think I don't care about certain groups of people, which is actually the exact opposite of why I ran.
Right.
So, like, how have you seen that the last 10, 15 years?
Well, I mean, kind of like I explained earlier, it's kind of like a pendulum. You know, we went from one side in the county to where we were very conservative, very against gays and all of that. It wasn't part of the community. Nobody talked about it. And, you know, and I believe even in the 90s, there was a death here in Shasta County that was, you know, hate crime.
I believe it was out in Igoono, I think.
So, you know, growing up in that and then now seeing...
Maybe it was Happy Valley. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. But now seeing, you know, the NorCal outreach and seeing the prom and, you know, seeing the drag shows and all of that. I mean, it's nice. And then I go to a show. I went to one of the drag shows. And I'm not a person that's easily offended. And... I'm not a huge part in the LGBT community because, you know, it seems like they're angry all the time. So we go to this show and we're sitting there listening to it and, you know, they have a person up there talking, joking around, and then they go and they start making fun of conservatives because they say specifically there's no conservatives in this room. So they can be offensive to us, but we can't be offensive to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a double standard. So, like I said, it's a pendulum. We were over here with, you know, all the gays were wrong, and now we're over here with all the straights are wrong.
Yeah.
We just got to meet in the middle and just love everybody.
Yeah. The, you know, and that's, and as politicized as it gets now, that's what bothers me the most is really a lot. I mean, politics to me is, you know, a strong military, cheap gas, a booming economy, you know, the opportunity to get ahead. And, you know, that's what politics really is to me. Or we'll talk in the second half hour about a budget. But, you know, but now it's become so much, about, again, like you said, like who you're sleeping with and what you're supporting. It's just, it's crazy. So let me ask you this. For your kids, how is it when you go back to school? Because I can tell you and Kayla are very involved parents. So you guys go to back to school night. What's the reception you get usually from teachers and anything like that? Because it's still not taboo, right, to be gay in Shasta County, but it's still not.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily take our experiences into account because we are having difficulties with the school and our child's education as of right now.
Okay.
As far as the reciprocation as with the community in general, you can tell when somebody isn't comfortable.
Yeah.
And the only thing is just don't talk about it. You know, why do you have to shove it in their face that you are what you are?
Yeah.
You know, why can't you just have a conversation just to have a conversation? Why does it need to be talked about?
Yeah.
You know, what does it matter the way I dress? What does it matter that, you know, my haircut, whatever? Just the reason that we're in the room isn't about what I look like or who I'm sleeping with. The reason we're in the room is to talk about what we're here to talk about.
Yeah, and I think what's happened, and this is just my opinion, not as a politician or anything else, but I think what's happened is all of a sudden everything is so, there's so much vitriol and there's so much judgment and there's so much, you know, pushing. That it feels like, well, you know, like commercials. Like when I watch, and I don't watch commercials very often because I tend to watch, like, I finally cut cable. Like, I finally became the person that cut cable and just have, like, Amazon Prime and, like, Hulu or whatever. But still, you'll see commercials. And when you watch it, even the commercials are pushing a different variance than what statistics would tell you. Like, every other couple on a commercial is gay.
Right.
Which... is like, I don't care, but don't like push it where that's like half the population. And then I think what happens is you get to the point, and most people like me aren't going to like call someone like yourself and say, hey, I want to talk about it, and then much less make it public. Because I think a lot of people want to talk about it. I think a lot of people want to know. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like, our mutual friend who I was going to, the other person I was going to have on the show, and you are, you're very articulate, well-read, you've got a wide breadth of life experience, and you've lived here a long time, which is really important to me because you understand Shasta County. I think it's really, I want this community to get along, and I want everybody to stop fighting. At the same time, I don't want our kids conditioned. So what can I do to push to encourage people to go to the schools and say, hey, look, get this crap out of our schools?
I mean, I think doing more stuff like this and reaching out to the community and having real conversations is the only, real ammo we have left. Because everybody wants to just talk about the agenda and talk about all of these different, genders and all of this stuff. But it in the end, it should just be about education and not about sexuality and all these things.
Yeah. I mean, I think the important thing right now is, like, kids need to be just kids. Kids need to be just left alone.
Absolutely agree.
And I think what's happening, though, is, have you ever thought about getting involved at any kind of level, at a school board level or a level of being a voice? Because, I could line up, 10 moms, 10 grandmothers, a few dads and uncles, and I think your voice matters far more to the people listening than all those other people's. Because it just holds a greater weight.
It's never something I really thought about. But
I'm not holding you to it.
Oh yeah,
I don't have candidate papers for you to file. But I just think more brave people have to keep standing up that are totally middle of the road. Your person that loves their kids, loves their family, loves their country, and just wants to see everybody.
And I think I've had a conversation with every single one of my friends because everybody has questions.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to just meet somebody and just be scared to talk to them. There should be that comfortability, and not everybody knows how to address people, and not everybody that's gay, straight, or whatever knows how to talk about those things.
Yeah.
I've even met straight people that aren't comfortable about talking about their sexuality, right? And I've always been an open book, and that's what I've told everybody, whether I know you or not. If you want to walk up to me and ask me a question, ask me a question. If I don't want to answer, I'm just going to say, I'm sorry, no.
Yeah, exactly. How does that gap get bridged, though? It's one of those things. I remember, I'm just trying to think. It's not good to have silence on the radio. So I'm thinking about, because it might be somebody who's really averse to weapons or guns, and they go into a gun store for the first time. They may get really, really antsy, as if all the guns are going to just start firing rounds.
As far as the work that I do, we did have somebody that was in our work environment, and we open carry at our job, who wasn't comfortable with weapons, but they still did the job. They understood that when they came to work that day, that it was a needed thing,
yeah.
Right? And that was their choice to work there. It's not like, we are forced into a job and you have to work it till you die.
Yeah.
It's voluntary. You're here because of your choice. And they made it open that they didn't want to carry, and that's fine. We don't push that envelope. But they can't, infringe on us having to carry for our safety and security.
Yeah.
So.
No, I think that's a good example, and that's wise. And as you're talking, I'm thinking through like when did so much of this become such a thing? And I think it was probably during COVID and coming out of COVID, where like there was already political divides in the country, but I think it just was really deepened in 2016. And then 2020, and then now in 2024, this November, I can't even, it's going to be, I have a lot of thoughts, but it's going to be way worse, regardless of who wins. Do you think that most of this, when it comes to sexuality and gender, became so targeted and not targeted, but maybe like so like almost angry feeling because of like school systems and what they started to do with like transgender kids and transgender like sports and stuff like that?
I think that the LGBT community kind of jumped on the race train during all the riots and everything.
Unpack that for me.
So, I mean, it all really became an issue under Obama. I mean, that's when we all started talking about repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell and everything like that. And I was serving at the time that that got repealed. And it changed nothing. Every single person that I had already served with already knew. It wasn't talked about, but they knew, right? And so it changed nothing. But civilians felt better. You know, and that's kind of how it is with every group. You know, one group is feeling a certain way, so a bunch of people will glob on and say, oh yeah, we agree with you, and then we also feel this way. And then they want to just try to get on your momentum and get their needs met. And so it seemed like during the Obama candidacy and all of that, that it was such a high focus with race and the LGBT community that they all just kind of come globbed together, and now it's become one issue when it's supposed to be two completely separate issues.
Yeah.
And in the end, it all boils down to we just need to be nice to each other.
Amen to that. Yeah, and that's what I don't – and that's, again, what I don't understand is, you know, we don't have to agree on a whole host of things. It doesn't – it just – that doesn't mean there has to be anger and there has to be this intensity of, like,
you know,
my views, you know, versus.
I've met more angry liberals than I have conservatives. Have I met angry on both sides? Absolutely. Have I gotten insulted from both sides? Definitely. But for the most part, it seems like the liberal side is more angry and emotional than the conservative side. And that's why I've leaned more towards the conservative side, because they're more willing to ask questions than they are to assume and just get mad and spit in your face.
Yeah.
When I was in the military, I had someone spit on me in Humboldt County.
Yeah.
Why? Because I was wearing a uniform that they didn't like? I didn't do anything to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing. If everybody just is nice to each other, stop listening to the news, stop listening to the narrative. Just go outside and talk to your neighbor. Are you mad with them? Are they doing anything that you hate? No, then why are you mad?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that when I go back and think about things that, like, like when I was I graduated in '94. I used to watch Saturday Night Live. I watched it a little bit after probably college, so maybe in 2000 I kind of stopped watching it. But I remember they used to have. I mean, when you think back, even just 20 years ago, 30 years ago, of what was on TV and acceptable, like. Saturday Night Live had this skit called The Ambiguously Gay Duo. It was a cartoon. Or you had In Living Color that had skits about that. And I think back about some of that stuff. And a lot of it's very, very cringy. You know, you think, oh, gosh. And you think, okay, society is so much better where we're not putting people in categories, marginalizing them, and then making them, feel I don't want to say marginalized, but like highlighted, and sexuality and stuff like that really isn't just a joke or whatever. It's but the one thing is what I do miss is the ability for everyone just to be able to laugh at themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I laugh. I mean, my family laughs at me, and I laugh at myself far more than I laugh at anything on TV, because I can see. The comedy in a lot of things, and everyone takes everything so serious.
Mm.
You know, did you ever have any like memories or anything like that of like shows that you felt like, nah, I kind of feel offended by that, or it's like, ah, that's the world I live in. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, not really. I don't remember any shows ever really being offensive. I grew up in a very Christian home. You know, for a while we went to Bethel. We went to a few other churches around town.
So growing up in a Christian home, when did you come out to your parents? Or did they just know before you came out?
I had a very large family. And for my entire life, they told me I was gay, which started about 3 years old. And if you can explain to me how a three-year-old can show sexuality, I'd love to hear it. But they shoved that narrative down my throat for many, many years, and whether it was that or I am who I am, who knows. But it was very...
That's a show in of itself.
Yes.
No, and I'm not a psychologist, so I would be unqualified to ask the questions and unpack that. But that's funny, not funny, but it is. It's funny you say that, because I have a person that cuts my hair. Her sister's gay. was a freaking star in high school. She was a year, 2 years ahead of me, but she was always, and we've talked about that, that it was always, oh, so-and-so's gay, so-and-so's gay. And it was, and then she's, you know, wound up being gay. And when I say wound up, it's the same exact, what you just said. Not sure if that was something that I was just conditioned.
Right.
Or if I was.
And you know, and nobody will be able to know because, you know, it's, yeah, it's environment versus, nurture versus nature. It's,
yeah.
And we could talk about it all day long and still not know for sure.
So
coming out was extremely, it wasn't necessarily my choice. I went to high school with a lot of my cousins and there was a girl who had a crush on me who ended up kissing me in the middle of the quad at Foothill High School. And my cousin went home and told their parents, who went home and told my parents, and then here we go. It was a huge family blow-up.
Yeah.
And so that's another fear, you know. It's the religious aspect. You keep getting told your whole life that you're going to go to hell for if you do these things, if you believe these things, if you feel these things. And then you start feeling those things, and then you start hating yourself because you don't want to be that way. You know, you don't want to feel like you are a failure to your family.
Yeah.
And again, that's where the anger comes in, right? Is you hate yourself for being a way that they didn't want you to be, so you lash out at the rest of the world.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of that could just be the self-narrative internally and not talking about it. And yes, there are families out there who have disowned their children for coming out or anything else. But there's more families out there who have embraced it.
Yeah.
Who didn't like it beforehand, but have flipped the script as soon as they know that someone they love.
When I hear of families disowning their kids for anything, it just makes me sick. I mean, thank goodness Jesus hasn't disowned me for the things and the choices or even the thoughts I've had. But here's what I'm going to do. I want you to be – now, I have – I'm starting what's called the Kevin Christ Show, kevinchristshow.com. I want you to be my first guest.
Okay.
And I want to bring you back. It'll be streamed online. It'll be – it's going to be – when I say a big deal, I'm excited about it because these are the conversations I want to have. It's going to be an hour, and I want to pick this back up with kind of where we're finishing from not just the spiritual aspect but just the family aspect because I want to help young people – navigate this process in their life in a safe way, but also at the same time not impacting our schools. And again, I have no jurisdiction over schools, but I do have a voice, and people do listen. And not to the point where schools are shoving certain things and certain questions into kids' minds at a young age that should not be talked about at school. It should be at the home.
Yeah, in reality, the school and family really just needs to be there in support of their children and be ready to talk about whatever the child wants to talk about and not shove it down into a bottle and, you know.
Yeah, and if you'd like, you're totally welcome to stay for my next guest because we'll be talking about all things money and budget. Might be interesting, and I'd love to get your input. So
absolutely.
With that, we'll be back in 120 seconds. That's 2 minutes for you scholars. All right.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that's firmly rooted in our history.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria, for supporting Tree of Life International Charter School. Gracias por todo su apoyo.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria!
The Shasta Lake Chamber of Commerce wants to thank the Redding Rancheria. They have sponsored our Friday night in the park for more than 18 years, and we really appreciate it.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Cascade Curations in downtown Redding is a unique destination location. Cascade Curations is a vibrant hub celebrating the creativity and talent of local artists, musicians, and designers. Clothing racks are stocked with upcycled and upscale thrift, as well as new clothing unlike anywhere else. Whether you're seeking beautiful artwork to adorn your home, new music to inspire you, or musical instruments and gear to play, Cascade Curations is a must-visit spot to immerse yourself in Redding's thriving arts and culture scene. Located in the Foundry Square next to the dip.
Wind River Resort and Casino is hosting a Father's Day weekend to remember. Our annual Bacon and Brewfest will kick off the weekend Friday, June 14. Enjoy live music and tasty treats from a variety of local restaurants and breweries.
For only $25 plus fees.
Keep the fun going and join us Saturday, June 15th for Micro Wrestling.
Tickets start at just $15 plus fees. Don't miss this action-packed weekend.
For tickets or complete details, visit WindRiver.com or call 1-800-280-YOU-WIN. And find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history. It is with great honor and pride that we have been able to support several amazing local businesses like these over the years.
Thanks to the Reading Rancheria for their support of the Kiwanis Fiesta Dam Club Food for Kids program. We send 185 bags of food home every Friday. They're instrumental in helping us.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
All right, we are back. This is Kevin Cry. This is my show. We're wrapping up with Felicia, and I forgot to take any callers. We did have a caller come in, so I'm going to spend about 30 seconds on this call before I introduce the next guest. Carolyn or Caroline, are you there?
It's Carolyn. Okay. Yes,
hey,
I
Carolyn.
Am here, Kevin.
How you doing? What's your question?
I just wanted to say thank you. I thought your dialogue, I loved that Felicia came on. I thought it was great. When it comes down to it, people want to be loved. And until our society starts embracing people and learning to just love them, you can disagree on things, disagree on beliefs, but people, all people want to be loved. Until we stop disagreeing and just love people where they're at, we're not going to have those good conversations like you just had. So I wanted to say thank you for having those good conversations this morning.
Oh, appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So with that, I'm going to introduce my next guest. His name is Jeff, and this being budget week, we have Tuesday, the Board of Supervisors. We kick off probably at least three. We have scheduled three. It may go even 4 days of budget hearings. Our budget now in the county is over $700 million. And I met Jeff at Everyday Fitness, the best gym in District 1, best gym arguably in Shasta County. Again, not paid. I pay to go there. And Jeff has a great story. He is a retired custodian, retired as a millionaire, as a custodian, and he's been given the moniker by others, the wealthy custodian. You could look him up, and he's done many podcasts. So welcome, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show, Mr. Cry. I appreciate it. Yeah.
No, definitely not Mr. Cry. It's
okay.
It's Kevin on my show. It's
okay.
My show. You will call me Kevin.
Okay, Kevin.
Yeah.
We'll skip that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If Patrick Jones is listening, he has to call me Chairman Cry.
Okay.
You can call me Kevin. No, I'm just kidding.
All right, Kevin. Yeah, basically, my story is I was a custodian for 33 years. And I live a kind of a frugal lifestyle, and I took that difference and bought mutual funds, and over time I have become a millionaire, but I don't really live a millionaire lifestyle. And so
what a lot of questions we're going to jam these
okay.
in, because one of the things that I have
go
is
ahead.
The been tasked with as one of five people that are going to vote on this year's upcoming budget. And again, I've been in private enterprise essentially my whole entire life, and I have a real problem with how the government spends money. Now, I'm not a burn-it-all-down guy, but I realize if I operated my business how county government, let's just even say federal or state government for that matter, runs, it's just completely inefficient, and there's so many gaps. So tell me, take as much time as you'd like.
Okay.
And Felicia, if you have something, you can interject as well. But tell us, Jeff, what you think the economy is going to do here in the next 4 to 6 months, or even 12 months.
I can't predict that. I can't predict the weather. The economy goes through cycles just like the weather goes through cycles in Reading. We're going to go to 106. This morning, we're maybe in the 90s. So I have no prediction. What I can tell you is I know your frustration with government, but you remember, in government, there are no incentives to be efficient.
Yeah, so let me ask you this, because let me ask the question this way.
Okay.
I know you're very data-driven. You're the little we've spoke, at the gym between sets is a lot of decisions you make as an investor are very data driven, as they should be.
Right.
You know, and I don't do, for me, I have a Charles Schwab guy or I have an investment guy, so I tend to go with their advice more. For yourself, tell me a little bit about what you see the data trends leading us to possibly between now and November.
I wish I had that information. I really don't get involved on data trends or what political parties in office are in power. I buy broad asset classes that go up and down, and I know that our country 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15, 20 years from now, we'll still be consuming and still be buying products and services. It'll just be at a higher price, but I don't ever see it going to zero. If it does go to zero, the economy, it's going to be guns and food and water. So I wish I could tell you what it's going to be like in the future, but I don't know. But I do know one thing. People will still be going out and buying things.
So when we spoke yesterday morning, you said a couple of things I thought were not necessarily profound, but they were very true about, you know, when conservatives tend to pull their money back, or people that are, let's say, and I don't like conservative versus, because I think liberal has this term that to me is more negative. When I hear conservative, I don't think the far right. When I hear the word liberal, I think far left. That's me. But let's say people of political ideologies, left versus right. Can you go back to the distinction you made yesterday?
I'll use some personal examples.
Okay. Because I'm going to put your feet to the fire a little bit, because you said some very good things yesterday.
Well, maybe because I don't, yeah. All I can say is I'm going to use some personal examples.
Okay.
My second wife, when Trump was getting elected into office, wanted to pull her money out of the market. And I said, you're using your personal opinion because you grew up in New York. I said, the president's do not have very much material impact on the economy, per se. There's statistical research that demonstrates, regardless if it's Democrat or Republican or vice versa, they don't really have that material impact. There was another individual that I mentor when the latest president, Biden, was getting in. She pulled all of her money out of the market. And I was just mentoring her recently, and I said, regardless who gets in, you're not going to pull your money out of the market. She goes, no. And I said, I have mentored you saying it's not timing the market, it's time in the market. So I don't get emotionally swayed one way or the other. I'll use an example. 2020, we think the world is coming to an end. What am I doing in March when they sent me home from the school district? I start buying because things are on sale. I get more nervous when we get at higher valuations. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I don't let my emotions get involved with my investment policy or philosophy, regardless. Does that help?
That's a perfect segue, because I wanted you to get there without me spoon-feeding it. Because for me, as we look at the budget coming up, you know, this isn't emotional. You know, to me, I look at the numbers, and I have quite a few other people that look at them with me. And it's not that people aren't working hard. It's not that people aren't good people. It's not that people don't have families to feed. But I look across, you know, at Felicia. I look at yourself. I look at a guest we have filming from New York named David doing a story that's hopefully not going to be a big hit job on me, but we'll see. He's nodding no, but, you know, my faith in media is pretty low. But we'll see if David comes through. And but the reality is, you know, these are just numbers, but these numbers represent our tax dollars. And, you know, as an investor, yourself or any of us, I send, and Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank says this best, but he sends his dollar bill out, and he wants that dollar bill to bring five or six of his friends back. And the worst thing you could do is send that dollar bill out, and it never comes back, you know. And so for me, I look at what are we getting for certain things at the county? What services are being delivered? What are the outcomes that we're getting? And now that I've been in office and I've had the time to go through a full entire fiscal budget or a full year, because when I got elected in 22 and seated in 23, and of course it was recall right out of the gate, but in the budget hearings of last year, it was already the prior board's budget that we were really approving because it would already have been worked on. So now, looking forward, this is the first budget that Supervisor Kellstrom and I, people could point to us and say, well, this is going to be your fault, good or bad. And there's not so much about credit, but it's about, hey, there's no emotion here. So as you've invested, Jeff, and you take the emotion out, do you find most people that you mentor tend to invest with emotion?
Yes, because it's part of the human condition. Emotion is what drives our behaviors, and it takes someone that's very disciplined, and that's kind of one of my secret powers in life, not very sexy or whatever, but it is a secret power that I'm not.
Felicia's laughing.
I don't get emotional. I mean, things go up and down through cycles. Life is moving in and out of form all the time. If you would have told me 3 days ago I'm going to be on this mic with you, I'd say, that ain't going to ever happen. So, you know, I try to separate that. And if you can separate the emotion, you're going to be a very good investor. Because you have to realize, starting out, things move up and down. I lived through the 08, 09, 10 at a school district. They cut 8 hours out of my custodial time. Got rid of 2 part-timers and said, guess what, Jeff? You get to take care of the whole school now by yourself. Figure it out.
And doing it in less hours.
Less hours.
You have more work to do.
Yep.
With less hours.
Mm-hmm.
Felicia, how does that work for you in your job if you have to do more work in less hours?
Oh, that was already, you know, a commonplace during COVID, and it was extremely difficult. It wore out everybody that was left.
And Jeff, do you think that is the discipline of investing? Is it really just saying, hey? So for the people listening that are maybe not in the market, or they're interested in getting in the market, or they're just looking, like, what do you think is the first step in terms of, to get where you are? Like, where did you start? Like, were you 18 years old and said, I'm never going to buy chewing gum or cell phones?
No. If anyone wants to know about my story, they can go on the internet and listen to Wealthy Custodian. But my journey started in 1996, Shasta College, personal finance class. Educate. And the more knowledge you have, the better informed decisions you can make. The big question is taking the knowledge and applying it to create a reality. Money just doesn't jump into my brokerage account or go into my employer-sponsored plan, or money gets put into my CalPERS. The government does the PERS, my employer-sponsored plan. I have to make decisions. Say, hey, you know that raise I got, you know, that little 2 to 3% raise because I'm a government employee? I got to delay today's consumption for something that's going to provide me an opportunity to have control of my time. And that's what my investment accounts have done and my behavior. I'm very wealthy in control of my time. My income is not very wealthy, depending on your value system, but my net worth in relation to my over my lifetime $20 an hour job, it is, but I do very different behaviors. No new vehicles. I cool my house with an evaporative cooler, so I'm not giving the utilities $500 or $600 a month. There's an opportunity cost there. I buy all new, not new, but used fishing equipment. Fish don't care about it. This clothing I'm wearing that you're seeing, if you're watching it, none of it was bought brand new. So those are some strategies. The payoff is, I left the school district at the end of 2020 when they were throwing more work on, and I said, I have a choice now. I have financial autonomy. I can leave. And to me, you can't put a price on that, Kevin.
Well, the thing about time is they're not making more of it.
Exactly.
And that's the thing that we have, that everybody, no matter how much you have, you're not taking stuff with you.
You got it.
And the time we have. And I look at, and I'm not going to bring it back because this is what narcissists do. And I'm a recovering narcissist. I realize that, but they make it about themselves. And my wife, I guarantee you, is nodding, saying amen. But anyway, the thing for me is, like, I have a short amount of time in office. And the time I have in office, I can make a difference. And I can make a difference for the taxpayer who put me there, that wants our money invested in programs with outcomes. And that's really, really what I'm after this week, is investing in programs with outcomes. And putting the emotion aside. Let me ask you this. What is the thing that would you say that most people that you mentor aren't able to give up? Is it that they have to have the $6 coffee? Or is it, what is it that you find to be the one thing that most people just can't cut out, but they should?
That is a very difficult question because it's going to be relative to everyone's value system. What I try to do with the individuals that I mentor is I try to ask them, what do you need to change today that your future self will be glad that you did? And you can say, oh, well, maybe I'm going to skip the new vehicle every 5 years. Or is it going to be the Netflix. Yeah, I don't even have that stuff. I can't even say it.
I don't even know what Netstream is.
So, yeah, or whatever the cell phone bill is. Whatever middle class, lower class, upper class, income level considers a must in our society. And you have to realize, Kevin, I'm operating with 50s and 60s values because of the father and the environment I grew up in. So you had
depression-era parents.
I had a father that was from the Depression, and he had a propensity for younger women. So my mother and him were 14 years apart.
Okay.
I technically should have somebody that was from my mom's generation. So back to what people have to give up. I don't see it as giving up something. I say is eliminating something so you get something in return for it. And to me, my status is time.
Time, yeah. Well, and I can tell you, I see you. I tend to go to the gym at usually 4:30, 5 o'clock. I'm there. I've seen you at that hour. And sometimes if I'm running late, I get there at 7. And never that late, maybe 6:30, and you're sometimes there. Sometimes you've been there the whole time because you have that time freedom.
Right. Right now, I trade my time for experiences. I trade my time for health because we could go into this. If you don't have your health, it doesn't matter how many dollars are in X account or how much equity is in your house. If you don't have the health and then the wealth to supply that to drive your lifestyle, it doesn't matter. I'm going to Trinity Lake this afternoon because we have this beautiful, cool weather. If I don't have the health, Kevin, to run up and down banks to chase down smallmouth bass or a largemouth, then I can't enjoy that experience. So when I go to the gym, I exercise because I consider myself a fishing athlete.
A fishing athlete.
I know that's way out of the world, but some of the places that I go into Clear Creek to go after those coastal steelhead trout that are wild and crazy, if I didn't have the health as almost a 60-year-old, I would not be able to get in there. If I don't have the flexibility or the stamina to go up and down banks and jump across rocks and hook them, that's my lifestyle. So
you were more passionate talking about those fish than you were about the economy and stuff. So let me ask you this. So
go ahead.
No. So were you always, because I'm really intrigued because so many people, like right now we're talking about, of course, McDonald's workers or fast food workers making $20 an hour and everything's just going up. And it's really hard for me when people are constantly talking about living wages and what they can afford. And I'll tell you, at the county, one of the things I'll bring up this week is we have some people, and I don't even know if this is going to be a popular thing, but quite honestly, it's my show and I don't care. But like eligibility workers at the county. I mean, they are the frontline, boots on the ground people that need to get paid more money. And it's hard to keep and the cost to retrain them when people leave and get new jobs. We're spending so much money having to constantly refill that bucket, and they're the ones doing the work. And sometimes I see, you know, the admin and what admin make it. So I'll wrap it with this. And I'll then ask the question: is it's so out of balance of who's getting paid what that? But I still don't like the thing that people say, well, I need to make so much more. It's like, well, take your case, for example. You said you were made $20 an hour, you know, and look what you've done with it. And it's about choices.
Yes, I agree. But you have to realize in our society, Kevin, it's a matriarchal, it's a meritocracy. You're paid on your merit, not what you produce. Okay, that's why we funnel people into college to get a piece of paper. I'm speaking here. I don't have a master's in business. I'm not a certified financial planner. I don't have an Ivy League. So what you're dealing with at the county is you're trying to elevate your frontline workers just like me as a custodian. But first, by elevating them, no matter how much you pay them, depending on the money personality type, and we could go into those, they're not going to be any better off.
Yeah.
Because it takes a ton of discipline to be in a very marketed society that we are today and say, I'm Jeff. Nope, I'm not going to have that particular service. No, I'm not going to buy that expensive vehicle. I'm going to take today's money and invest it in assets so I don't have to trade my time for money. So back to your question, you're going to have to educate the individuals that you're going to give them the more money because they're trading their time because you see value in it and you see this imbalance between the top and the bottom. That's why we have it. It's built into the system. But even if I give the bottom $5 more an hour in a year from now, they're not going to be any better off financially. That's the sad thing. I used to sit at negotiating tables. I've been on the budget committees where we're saying, hey, where are we cutting? And I'm like saying to myself, I could give these people more money. They're not going to be better off financially. Because
that's the thing. That's one of the toughest things for me is during our budget or during our union negotiations. You know, I really try to get the board to allow me to do some negotiating myself because I do that for a living. I negotiate contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really tough when I see people and they say, you talk about living wages and what they make. But so much of it is about the choices you make with your money. And it's difficult. It's difficult because, you know, we've got over 2,000 employees. And,
right.
I mean, I only got, you know, at a high time, I may have 60 employees. A low time, I may have, you know, 30, 35 employees. And I work really hard to educate every employee we have through programs and opportunities and workshops to say, hey, here's how you can get ahead, not just financially, but even just with your job. And I'm having a career path. And you know, not everybody's goal is to work for me forever, so let me help you get to where you want to go, but let's do some great things together on your way to get there and try and process them out. So Felicia, do you have any questions you want to ask? Because I feel like, go ahead.
Not currently. I'm just listening, honestly. It's just very intriguing to hear the other side of it, because honestly, I've never sat down and listened to budget talks or things like that. So it's really just entertaining to me.
So one of the things, Jeff, for me, so if people want to find you online, they can Google Wealthy Custodian?
Yeah, Google Wealthy Custodian Reading. I'll pop up. I've been on maybe a dozen podcasts. I don't advertise. I don't have a website. I'm not going to write a book. I've had many people want me to write a book. I don't want to get caught into that vortex. I mean, if I get more income, am I going to increase my standard of living? You know, mine is increase my standard of control of my time. That's very valuable to me. So you can go online. You can find me there. Listen to podcasts. And hopefully that I provide your listeners some valuable different viewpoints today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I think the most important thing, I mean, there's a lot of takeaways for me, and we've had, a few conversations at the gym in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I really want listeners to understand that, you know, money isn't emotional. Money's not emotional. Like now, there are some companies that I would make far more in. When Disney and some others started to go, what I guess we would say is woke, I pulled the money and put them towards companies that I have less of a return. And it wasn't an emotional decision, but it's like I want to support things that have the same belief and things that I can be proud of. And that isn't a financial decision. It's just one of those things that I get to choose who I get behind. And one thing I've really done, honestly, in the last 3 years is I just invest in my own companies. I start a new company. So instead of investing in Apple, I invest in Kevin Cry, and I invest in my leaders and in my team.
Your biggest wealth builder is your human capital.
Yeah.
Most super wealthy people, and it's not going to be a 401k. I hate to be a spoiler alert.
Yeah.
It's going to be your business.
Yeah.
Because the business has more potential to compound over time than my investment accounts. But that's not my personality. It's a pleasure to be here because that's your personality type. And you're allowing me this platform as a messaging vehicle for other people. So you really have to evaluate what is your personality type and then you move forward. There are some people who are going to be very happy working for the government, and they're happy with a 3-5% raise. There are going to be other people say, hey, I can go down to the Bay Area and start up a startup and sell it or go public with it and make $100 million. It's all what your value system is.
Yeah.
So.
And I think the value system, if it comes back to time, but few people value time. I mean, few people, because if people truly valued time, they would do so many things different with it. They would. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But you have to realize, Kevin, the way our species is set up, we are set up to go after shiny, sparkly things.
Yeah.
How do I catch bass and how do I catch trout? I hate using fishing analogies, but how am I catching those fish?
Yeah.
They're going after something sparkly and shiny. And by using technology today, we are 24/7 enveloped in it.
Oh, yeah.
And it takes a ton of...
And the media and the companies know that. So they just keep throwing those lures at us. So we're about out of time.
Okay.
About 30 seconds left. If you're listening, go to votekevincry.com. Follow me there. Or, again, thekevincryshow.com is going to spin up. I'm going to have both these individuals back for their own shows. Very extended. Felicia, Jeff, thank you. You guys have a blessed weekend.
The news
and
town hall
enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Thank you, Kevin. Our Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.